Hi, this is Leo, and if I want to know what's happening in Linux, hey, I'm going to listen to the Linux Link Tech Show.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show! Tech Show! Tech Show! Yeah!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 259, and today is Wednesday, August 20th, 2008. Welcome, everybody.
Hey, thanks.
We got an interesting crew tonight. Dan is a little busy, so he's going to be joining us a little later. Alan couldn't make it because he had some work-related stuff to do. Link is here. How you doing, Link?
Link just didn't freaking care, right?
Good to have Link aboard. And with joining us tonight, we got 330, for everybody knows from Linux Cranks. 330, welcome to
the show. Hello, everyone.
And also we got Lord Dragonblood.
Hey, the digital dragon's in the house.
Now, both of you guys are from Indiana, but you didn't know that prior to this, did you?
Nah, I had no idea.
Actually, I thought I'd caught it on the episode of Linux Cranks I was on recently.
Well, you're not nearby, right? You guys are pretty far, though.
Say, I'm as far east as you can get without being in Ohio.
I'm about an hour south of Indianapolis.
Now, in Indiana, they got this funky thing, right, with the time zones. Like, there's a certain part of Indiana that's in its own time zone.
Yeah, it's up actually where Monster B is, up near Chicago.
The Gary area.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird.
It's because all the people up there work in Illinois anyway, so they might as well just be on Central Time.
I guess that makes sense if they're going into Chicago.
Yeah, hell, we just started daylight saving time.
Really?
Yeah, like last year. I was pissed.
Actually, we just brought it back after 30-some years.
Dude, I'm only 23. I don't give a shit what happened before. In my lifetime, we've never done it.
So let me ask you guys, what are your backgrounds? I guess 330, you could start. You're a young guy. You're only 23. Well, what's your interest in computers, and how did you get into Linux?
I got into Linux because a buddy of mine was a quote-unquote lead hackzor, and I wanted to be one just so bad, just absolutely terribly bad. And he was like, oh, if you want to be a real hacker, you got to use this thing called Linux. It's written by a bunch of hackers, so you don't have to try and worry about viruses while you're giving other people viruses. And I started using it and jumped back and forth between Windows and Linux until Microsoft said I had installed Windows too many times, and I told them to go get stuffed.
So now that you're on the show, we have your IP address. The FBI is on their way, and they're going to kick your door down and drag you out by your hair.
Dude, they can try. It's rigged.
So, Lord Dragonblood, how old are you, and how did you get into computers and Linux in general?
29 years old. I'd say my first experience with computers goes back to like an Epson computer that was probably a 286, I'm guessing, back in, you know, pure DOS days. Moved up through the ranks from there. I'd say about 95, 96 was my first foray into Linux when I found a Mandrake box at a half-price bookstore. Tried working with it and kind of gave up because at the time the heavy RTFM sentiment when I was trying to get help getting that system online. Came back a few years later, when Asterisk started popping up and wanted to play with that. And been using it heavy ever since, and been Windows free maybe 3-4 years now.
Cool, good for you, man. Now you're on dial-up. You're actually connected through the regular phone line.
Yeah.
That's brutal, man. That's because you're out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yep.
Dude, I would move. Fuck dial-up.
Yeah, I couldn't take dial-up, man.
The nice thing about where I live right now is if I want to throw a massive party, the neighbors would more likely show up than bitch.
Dude, I have the same thing, but all my neighbors are meth heads, so I've got more on them than they do on me.
Yeah, but I don't have to worry about my neighbors stealing my stuff to sell it to get more meth.
Not that expensive to make.
Let me ask you, 330, is it like, you know, Dawn of the Dead, where there's like, you know, bands of zombies roaming the countryside, and you just sit on your porch with your hunting rifle picking them off?
It is, actually.
That's the vision I get. There's like, you know, like a band of them, you know, zombies, and they're looking just for, you know, something to eat. You probably.
It's huge, like a trailer park where everything is cemented down. It's bad.
Oh, man.
And, you know, I'm, you know, this young, you know, fairly educated hippie type. I totally do not fit in. It's really funny.
Well, welcome, guys. I participated in Linux Cranks a few times. It's a fun time. I recommend people to go listen to it. It's pretty funny.
I'd like to point out that one of the opening clips you played just goes to prove Leo Laporte doesn't listen to the show because he has no clue what's going on with Linux.
Yeah, Leo's a nice guy, man, but his Linux knowledge is a little limited.
I am a fan of Leo Laporte, and I've been aware of him since, you know, Screensavers and Call for Help.
Right,
when
Tech TV
still existed.
Yeah, he needs to expand. He needs to actually run Linux day to day, I think.
All of his servers run Red Hat Enterprise.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was going to say he probably does run Linux every day and just doesn't know it.
Yeah, he's into Apple. That's his thing. So, speaking of Apple,
that's right. He can continue to have a small penis. That is fine.
Hey, Link, aren't you an Apple user?
I have a couple. Yeah. I don't use them very often, but I do have.
That's right. The skin's flexible. Yeah, it can shrink and grow and shrink and grow.
Yeah.
So by Linux Crank theory, he has a medium-sized one.
Yeah, 3-4 inches. Yeah, some girls like it that thick.
Well, speaking of Apple, man. All these people ran out and they bought these iPhones, and then, you know, the second generation iPhone, which was supposedly half price, but it's not when you add up the price plan and the increases that they've done to it. But there's been issues. People have had call dropouts and poor quality. They won't get 3G speeds. Instead, they'll fall back to edge speeds, and edge is considerably slower than 3G. Now, enough people were bitching about it that Apple, you know, came out and said that, you know, they thought it was a chip problem on the hardware. So they issued a firmware upgrade, I think it was yesterday, and word on the streets is this firmware upgrade has not improved anything. In fact, it's made it worse for a decent amount of, you know, people that downloaded and installed it. So.
And probably bricks any phone that's been jailbroken.
Well, Apple doesn't want you to use, you know, third-party apps without their consent. You know, they don't want you to do what you want to do with your hardware that you paid for. You're just leasing it from them.
You did not buy the hardware. You're just simply leasing it.
Yeah, and then there was another story that came out late this afternoon that Apple was being hit with a class action suit of the quality of the service for the 3G phone. And
I say a funnier class action suit they're under is for the way they treat their hourly employees. Did you guys hear? We were talking about this on Linux Cranks. Did you guys hear it?
I heard it. Yes. Maybe for the people who didn't hear it, you can give us a little background on what exactly happened.
All right, what they did was they took a whole bunch of hourly employees and listed them as management in their books so they didn't have to pay them overtime.
Oh, nice. They're cooking the books.
Yeah.
Walmart got in trouble for the same shit several years ago, too.
Yeah, so maybe if all of these lawsuits happen together, it'll just bankrupt Apple and we won't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, they're really rich. They started off as a computer company, but their main business now is consumer electronics.
Yeah.
iPods, phones, and that sort of thing. They're not really a core computer company anymore. So, they have tons of people that are buying their products, and they don't even know that they make, computers, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I mean, we know.
There are people that have Apple products that don't even own a computer.
Sure.
That just blows my mind. They know what an iPod is, but they don't have a computer or anything to use it with.
I don't know. What's annoying is if you talk to somebody who doesn't know, specifics, they'll refer to any digital recorder or playback device as an iPod. It's just lack of education, I guess. It's kind of like how, Xerox is a Xerox.
Yeah.
It just became like a generic.
Escalator is an escalator.
It's kind of annoying, actually, because there's plenty of other audio players that are not Apple that are quite good. I like the iAudio line from South Korea. Excellent stuff, reasonably priced. Works well with Linux. The company that sells it doesn't hate Linux, so.
Hey, man, I just use my NA-100 as a portable media player.
That's what I'm using now. Actually, I sold my old iAudio to Dan, and he gave it to his daughter, and I'm using my NA-800, my Nokia NA-800 is my media device now. And I've been pretty happy with that.
Oh, it's a great media device.
Oh, it's awesome.
How well does it handle a playlist that's, 300 files long?
It'll handle it as long as you don't want to sort it in any sort of manner.
But that's just the full media player that's on there.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of other media players that you can play around with. I haven't had a chance to play around with them yet. I've only had my Nokia for, I don't know, a month and a half maybe. Not even. But I'm loving it pretty big time, man. It's an awesome device. I picked up a 16 gig card for it. Works great.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually stick two 16s in there. It'll work. And the flash, flash storage has come down in price. I paid like $43, I think I paid, from Newegg.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to do dual boots on it. I know some people have gotten to dual boot into like regular Debian. The OS that's on Nokia is MAMO, which is based on Debian. It's a customized port of Debian for the ARM processor that it has. Some people, they put the vanilla Debian on there, and you can run pretty much any regular app that's in the Debian repos.
Hasn't Android also been – people got Android up and running on it?
Yeah, they got it to boot into it. I don't know how functional it is. I think it works a little better with the NA10 because it has a keyboard. I don't think it does as much with the N800. And I don't know how capable it is, whether or not you can run, third-party apps on there yet. But somebody's working on it, which is kind of cool, Flexibility is the name of the game, being able to do what the hell you want to do with it. Nokia, unlike Apple, actually, want people to tinker on their devices and, they're trying to build, like, a third-party developer community, It's a shame because not enough people know about the Nokia. I've shown my Nokia to some of my coworkers and stuff, and they're pretty impressed with the device. I paid $150 for it. It does media great, and it does a whole bunch of other stuff. Really well too.
It really freaks people out here in Richmond where I live, because no one has ever seen anything like it. I've got a Palm Centro, the phone, and people think that's amazing. Like, it's really wild. I'll just be sitting on the bus, watching a video or something. People are like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, and unlike the, a lot of times Linux people, they attack Flash, that it's on the internet and it sucks. Whether you hate it or not, Flash actually works on the Nokia tablets.
Yeah. I can't get it running very well on my 800, but I still have the original OS on it. So.
Dude, you need to upgrade to the Diablo, or at least Chinook, which was the version prior to Diablo.
See, I would go up to Diablo, but no one has been able to tell me if MemoCrypt is available on there.
Yeah, I don't run that, so I don't know. You can go to a list. There's a listing of applications that have been ported over. If you go to the memo.org site, you can see on the Diablo what's listed the packages.
See, that's a serious deal breaker for me.
So what do? You encrypt the whole file system with that?
No, not the whole file system, but I have this horrible thing where I forget my wallet at home, and then I starve to death when I'm out. So I took a scan of my bank card, and I have it encrypted on there. And when I forget my wallet, I just open it up and go, "Hey, can you type the numbers in?" and hand it to them.
And they do it, and it works.
Yeah, and it really freaks them out. Then, yeah, I'm already the weird guy that's always got headphones in, and yeah, I look like a space alien. It's awesome.
You're green.
I do the same thing.
That's interesting. Hey, Link, have you upgraded your Nokia?
You mean to the latest
yeah.
OS? The new one is it still in beta?
No, it's been released for a while now.
I got the OS 2008 on it, but I haven't upgraded any further than that yet.
Yeah, the best thing about Diablo is that any updates go over the air. You don't have to flash a device anymore.
Yeah.
With an OS image, you don't have to do that anymore. So you'll just be connected to the internet, and you'll get a little blinking orange icon in the system tray. You click on that, and all your updates come down.
Sweet.
It's pretty nice. It's just like running a regular Linux distro.
I really need to do that.
Do it. It doesn't take very long.
Is that a question of more how they were releasing it before? Or, is it just a matter of they just changed and put in a package manager now versus having to do it all, at one time?
The package manager was there previously, and it only handled, installable applications. What it is now, it will handle, core operating system packages as well. So if there's, a major system upgrade that comes through, it'll come through the package manager. Whereas before, you actually had to download the OS image and flash a device by after you connected it with the US cable.
And didn't they also recently merge the MAMO user repository with themselves?
I'm not sure about that. I have a couple of third party repos in there for a couple of the applications.
I'd be curious if the merging of the MAMO repository with them is why they can do that now.
I'm not sure. I think it has more to do with the actual operating system. That's my understanding of it. I may be wrong.
There seems to be a little bit too much coincidence of the timing on them kind of taking control of the MAMO repository, the main one at least, and Diablo having the ability to upgrade on the fly.
Well, all I know is it works pretty well, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Let's say Nokia had control of the main MAMO repo before, but it was only stuff that they had created, so it was kind of useless. Because anything even remotely cool that you wanted was in some other repo somewhere else. And so what they're doing is opening up that repository to other people. So then you don't have to add as many of them.
Yeah, there's some really great stuff. Besides playing media, I'm really into playing some old school games on there. I've got X-Mame set up so I can get some old ROMs of some old arcade classics. And I also got the Coleco emulator so I can run some of those old ColecoVision games. Such classics as Smurf and BC's Tires Quest.
I would never get anything done. I'd have to throw the damn thing away.
What my favorite thing is, one of my coworkers, he bought an iPod Touch, which is basically an iPhone without the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Same interface and everything. I think he got the 16-gig version. He paid, like, close to $400 with that thing. I showed him the Nokia.
I've got enough problems on a 30-gig player. Don't give me 16 gigs.
You see, I'm not one of these people that wants to have, like, everything I owned on the device. Though 16 gig is a lot. Regardless, I showed him the device, and he's, like, thinking about getting rid of it, selling it on eBay and getting one of the Nokias.
I say they're really nice, and when, you know, people are like, oh, you know, they never even ask what's on it. You know, it's just, it's a device, and you can do shit with it.
I think it's because so many people are used to, you know, Palm and other PDA devices that they don't care what it runs. It does what they need it to.
So you know the thing that's really fun to do with an 800 is I have a Kismet running on it. And I've got some other, you know, air snort and stuff. Just sitting there and trying to break into Wi-Fi access points. Glorious.
Do you have a job?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wondering.
For now. I'm planning on rectifying that, too.
Have you done any Bluetooth hacking?
No, actually, I've been reading up on it. About the only thing I've done is, with my phone, I accessed another guy's phone that just had it open and sent him a picture of a strap-on dildo and then sent him a picture that said, hey, you should turn off your Bluetooth.
That's kind of like your version of Goatsy, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It was pretty funny. It was, you know, he was sitting there with his family in a restaurant eating.
Oh, that's not right.
I was bored, man. I was on break.
That's not right. Is it his fault that the phone he bought is insecure?
I mean, he could just make it undiscoverable.
True. You could shut it off. You could turn Bluetooth off. Most phones let you do that. And that's what
I
do.
Yeah, but how many people know that's something you know, need to do or should do?
Should leave it off because it uses up more power if you leave it on.
Saying if you wanted to ask me, you know, if you figured out it was me and was like, hey, dude, how the hell do I turn it off? I totally would have done it for him. Me and my buddy used to go around
but
war
after
driving.
He sent him a picture of a strap-on, you know, do you think he really would have asked you or just kind of punched you in the face?
Either way. I'll take a punch to the face to teach someone about security.
Well, if you go to Ohio Linux Fest and you tell me that it was you who was harassing me, I'm going to knock your teeth out.
I would have had a better story than that.
But don't mind the t-shirts.
I'm joking here.
We know what kind of rages you have. We've been warned.
Hulk rage.
Hey, we've heard your favorite, you know, drink is Hulk juice. Vodka and Mountain Dew.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Vodka and Mountain Dew. Isn't that Dave Yates' drink?
That has to be with Diet Mountain Dew.
Speaking of Dave Yates, man, his internet connection's been down for days. What the heck is up with that?
Yeah, I heard about that. No idea.
He's switching formats from WADA Linux links to WADA BSD links.
So it's like the domain name changing over?
And having to, like, change all his Spark machines over to running some form of BSD.
Well, joking aside, supposedly, you know what Dave is, he had a lightning strike, and his connection's down, his DSL connection's fried, so...
Crap.
Who knows when, you know, he hosts his own website on his server, so
yeah.
Who knows when he's going to come back.
I heard somebody picked up and mirrored him, though. So if you go to the old feeds, they're still up.
Oh, so you can pull down the old episodes of the show?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Say, see if that happens for BSD talk, bastards.
What do you got against BSD talk?
I don't really have I just have an issue with BSD, and they were convenient.
Well, I met Will Backman in Boston at Linux World Expo a couple years back. He's a nice guy, man. Came over, introduced himself. He was very friendly.
It was the only BSD podcast I knew of to, you know, talk shit about, so.
I noticed that, like, sometimes when you interview certain BSD people, they tend to talk about Linux quite a bit.
Well, because if it wasn't for us, they wouldn't have anything to run.
Oh, jeez.
And a while back, he had an interview with Richard Stallman, if I remember correct. And on the MP3 feed, there was just a, hey, there's not going to be an MP3 version of this show. Grab the AUG version if you want to hear it.
Well, you know why that was? Because he couldn't change the name to GNU BSD Talk.
No, it was because Stallman insisted that only, like, a non-patent encumbered version of his interview go out.
You see, he didn't require that with us. He just made us say, the first time we interviewed him, he made us say, the GNU Linux Tech Show. But the BSD Talk
doesn't have to... And then Link pissed him off and he won't come back?
We haven't asked him since then, actually. How long ago was that, Link? Do you remember? Was it like over... It's been about a year?
Oh, it's been a year easy since the last time he's been on.
Right? It's been about a year. We'll invite him back on and he could tell us to go fuck ourselves or say yes. Totally his choice.
Troll says the last time you guys had RMS on was in November.
Okay, there you go. Trolls knows all.
Say, everybody in the chat's ripping on RMS, and I don't get it. I don't see how anyone can rip on the guy. If it wasn't for him, none of us would be doing this.
Have you ever met the man in person?
No, but I would love to.
I actually met him here in downtown Indianapolis the day that the last time he was on the show, back in November, in person. And he can, when you put him in a large group, he can be very grating on your nerves. But you break it down into a smaller group, and he's a lot easier to handle.
Yeah, he can annoy people sometimes. He's a bright guy.
I think he just get. Sorry, go ahead.
He's a bright guy. He's done a lot for the community. He seems to have, like, his spiel done, you know. Whenever he does a talk, it's pretty much the same talk. And he kind of approaches, like, interviews in the same kind of manner. And once you get him out of that spiel, I think you get a truer picture of him sometimes.
And say, a buddy of mine was talking to a lady who worked with Stallman at the Free Software Foundation and did some Linux kernel hacking and stuff. And she said at the Free Software Foundation meetings, no one would sit next to him. You know, there was always this seat right next to him, no one sit in. She was like, so I popped my happy ass down there. And then she figured out why no one would sit next to him.
He's a
hippie in every sense of the term.
He is a bit odoriferous, and he loves his sushi.
He claims he's not a hippie, though. You know, people have asked him that.
Yet he will tell you the reason he keeps his hair and his beard like that is because of hippies.
I don't know. I guess it's a little bit of a contradiction. But hey, everybody's entitled to it, right? Well, Link wants to know is can you make money doing closed software development, right, Link?
You mean with free?
No, I don't want to know that. I already know the answer. No, you can't.
You want him to answer that?
No, you can.
No, you can't.
Come on. Say that to Miguel de Acasa.
Who?
You know, the guy that created GNOME, or Jeremy Allison, the guy that pretty much created Samba.
Yeah, and what are they doing now?
They're making money. Doing
what?
Miguel isn't working on GNOME.
There you go.
He's doing Mono.
See, but Jeremy Allison is sitting at Google headquarters.
They're not making money working on this stuff that they, you know, were doing before. This is, they're still sideline projects. You know, people are actually paying them to develop other software for them. That's how they make their money. That's how it works.
I know a guy who is making money doing development on Linux for a private, for a small company that makes network appliances, and he's writing custom code for the kernel.
See, now that's really cool, but the whole problem with that is that we're talking along and we're going, yeah, well, I know a guy that does it. And that to me says that it's not a very plausible career path. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're saying it's the exception and not the norm.
Yeah, and I can't afford to do that because, you know, I know a guy that's me that has a family that has to, you know, pay bills for and feed and things like that. I just can't do it. I can't step out on that limb, you know?
And what about companies like Digium? Do you consider that they're making their money off, you know, developing Asterix? Or is it they're putting out Asterix for free and making their money off support?
They're making their money off support.
But they would have nothing to support if they weren't writing the software.
But that's still, that's not their, no one's paying them for the software. They're paying them for the
Some of them are actually. Don't they have like a tiered model where
they
customers and they give them the newer features first if they're like, you know, have a contract with them?
I thought you could still grab at least SVN and have the same stuff as those guys.
But you got to build it yourself.
I do that with Asterix anytime I run it, so.
See, what most people don't realize is with free software, and this is what makes it different than open source, is you don't have to develop it in the open. Richard Stallman had worked for two years on Emacs before anyone had ever laid eyes on it. What you do is you create the software, you sell the software, and when you sell it, you give someone the source code for it.
How is that different from the open source definition?
Well, with open source, it's a bunch of people working on it together. Yeah, you know, so it's out there, and it's, you know, if you go strictly by the free software model, the only way you could get the source code is from buying the software or knowing someone that has bought the software. And by the GPL, that person could, you know, redistribute what they bought and be completely fine. That's how CentOS exists. You can't just go get Red Hat Enterprise Linux. You know, you can't just go get the source code. Someone buys it, and then they redistribute it. And Red Hat's not suffering any.
I thought they were pulling the source for Red Hat from Red Hat itself and not buying new copies.
See, from what I heard, there's somebody that is on the team at CentOS that has a subscription to Red Hat Enterprise Linux.
Now, you can get – Red Hat makes their source code publicly available.
I believe so, yeah.
For their RHEL product.
Okay.
So you can just go and get that, and that's what they do. They go and get the source code that anybody else can go get.
Yep.
And then team rebrands the software.
Yep, they strip out all the trademarks.
And recompiles
stuff.
It, and there you go. Yep. They pull it. In fact, I think they even have a script to do that. Or maybe that was Fedora, maybe. Like that rebranding script that goes through and, I don't know.
Pulls out all the logos.
Yeah, it pulls out all the logos. And pulls all the mention of, you know, proprietary Red Hat stuff out. And off you go.
Okay, I've been wrong
By the
before.
Way, I'm watching my OS 2008... get started little update doohickey. I just upgraded the OS on my Nokia N800.
Woohoo!
Yippee, yippee.
Didn't take long,
actually,
right?
Pretty cool. Oh, no, actually, it only took just a moment or two. The sucky part is now I gotta go fishing around to find, like, Xterm and shit like that, right?
I got Xterm.
Yeah, that's why I haven't upgraded, because I've got my entire podcast recording schedule, my work schedule, and everything in a GPE calendar. And It would suck to try and export all that crap
out
of there.
If you upgrade the OS version, you got to back your settings and stuff. Otherwise, it gets blown away. You see, when I got the device, I had nothing on there. So I immediately upgraded it.
I should have.
I was talking to Dave Yates about this idea. He was mentioning a third-party PIM suite that he uses, and it's also got a port on for desktops also. And I was curious how the idea of using Conduit would work to sync your data back and forth.
What's Conduit?
It's a GNOME application for syncing stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that a lot of these companies that release products that are based on Linux don't actually include like client software for Linux. I guess they just assume that the Linux people will figure out a way, you know?
They figure we'll just roll our own anyway.
Which is true to a certain degree, because, you know, if there's something there,
Go ahead, Pat.
I was just going to say, if there's something you want
you
and it's not available, go right. Yes.
What was that?
That's one of the default songs on the OS upgrade playing.
Okay.
What I find more offensive are, network appliances that are completely built around Linux, but you have to have a software for the management console of it, and they only write it for Windows.
Oh, like the Drobo?
Exactly.
I want a Drobo so bad, but I'm not doing it until there's a Linux client.
Why is that?
I'm just going to use a free NAS box.
I would, but it runs BSD, and I'm morally opposed to BSD.
Why are you morally opposed to BSD? What's your problem with BSD?
I don't like their license. I don't think that anyone should be able to take something that was once free and close it up.
But not for nothing, you can do that with any piece of software. If you release a piece of software, okay, and you're the copyright holder, you can change the license at any time that you want. So if you have something that's GPL... Okay, yeah, that version could be forked prior to the time that you change the license. But you can change, you know, the owner of the copyright can change that license anytime.
Yeah, but under the GPL, the versions that were out and that were free are still free. You can't retroactively go through it.
True. It becomes forked after you change the license.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. Yeah. If someone wants to take their... their bat and ball and go play by themselves, they can, go shove off. But, I'll be damned if, Miguel de Acasa decides, I'm going to take GNOME and I'll see you guys later.
What's interesting, though...
He couldn't do that. He couldn't do that at this point because there's too many other people involved in the project.
Well, what's interesting, the GPL, you talk about licenses and free software licenses. The GPL, really at its heart, it's protecting the end user. Okay, where the BSD license, it seems to be geared more towards companies and development houses that take existing software and, they're able to take and use it without any contributions back.
And that's why I don't like it. I'm an end user.
That's your perspective. I'm just trying to present what the other perspective is.
Okay,
In professional life, I've seen instances where companies – but prefer to use the BSD license because they don't want to give anything back. They just want to take the code and use it for whatever they want to use it for.
Or they just, you sit down the BSD license versus the, GPL, which is easier to sort through.
The GPL is really easy to sort through. I've read version 2 probably 9 times.
I could have read the, BSD license... probably, 3 times more than what you've read the GPL in the same amount of time just because of the length of it. And the companies do feel a little safer around the BSD license because some companies don't realize that we could just take Linux, write our stuff on top of it, and not have to give what we write back to the Linux community. But if we make an improvement to Linux... that's what we have to give back.
Actually, it's when you sell the product. That's what it where it comes down to it. You could take a piece of Linux code, change it, use it in-house, not sell that piece of code, you know, the software based on it. You don't have to give back anything. It's only when you actually sell a product based on something that was GPL'd.
You don't even have to sell it as soon as you distribute it in any sort of manner. You know, if you give it away for free, you still have to, you know, you still have to contribute back and you still have to put the license in.
You still have to put the license in, but I don't think you need to make the source code available. If you're just using it for in-house, I don't think you have to list anything.
It would
that's
depend
my understanding
on
of it.
Well, say, but that's the thing. If you're using it in-house, it's not a distribution. But if you, you know, let's assume that you wrote something and you're giving it away for free, but you don't, you know, the free is in cost. You would still have to give those modifications out as source code.
So who hates freedom here? Raise your hands. Come on.
I absolutely love freedom.
Freedom is great, but you should be able to choose not to choose on something.
Yeah. I think everyone should have the choice. Yeah, everyone has the right to be wrong. That's how I look at it.
Right. The BSD guys will say that the BSD license is actually more free than your GPL.
Yeah.
It really is a perspective thing, because if you look at the BSD license, it's more from, you know, a commercial developer kind of perspective, where they could take something and do whatever they want with it.
When I've looked at the BSD license in the past, I've thought of it as where the GPL is protecting one certain, you know, segment of the use population. BSD applies to everyone. But that's just my thought.
Yeah, there isn't one all encompassing solution. You know, you really need to see what your goals are for the software that you're developing, and what you want to do with it. And it really comes down to a personal choice, which license you choose.
Then there's always the do whatever the fuck you want license.
Which is what?
Which
artistic?
I think is no. It's the do what the fuck you want license. It's literally here's the software. Do whatever the fuck you want with it. I could have the name wrong. It could be do whatever the hell you want.
Is there really a license called that?
Yes, there is.
I want to put software out under that. Just one piece. Just to be able to say, yeah, I've got something under the do what the fuck you want with it license.
That's pretty funny.
I also remember years and years ago, back in my Windows days, running across a piece of software for generating Vampire the Masquerade character sheets that the writer had put it under, had called it Bloodware. Where if you liked the software, the only thing he asked of you to do was to go donate blood somewhere.
I guess that's a good cause.
Yeah, most blood banks are, you know, as dry as a bone for the most part. Say too many people getting in car accidents and shit like that.
Well, back to freedom hating. You know, some people will say that if you have, say, like an NVIDIA graphics card, and you want to use the closed drivers or a freedom hater, well, me personally, I couldn't care less. If someone has a piece of hardware and they want it to function the way it was supposed to function, I don't have a problem with them using closed drivers. You know, it's your own choice.
Say, I use the term freedom hater as it's a term of endearment.
It is. It's a joke. It really is a joke.
Emacs users hate freedom because I prefer Vim. You know, Klaatu hates freedom because he loves Fedora.
Why is Fedora freedom hated?
I just don't like it. And I wanted to, you know, stick a boot into Klaatu.
Okay.
He's told me to shut up in the chat.
Until the open video card gets anywhere, I'm going to still be using ATI and NVIDIA, and maybe ATI will finally put out a product that'll make me change my mind about hating them.
Have they got their shit together finally, or what? I mean, for the longest time, ATI drivers have sucked in Linux.
They suck on every platform.
So it's not just Linux, then?
No, like, some of the people I know in Windows, they're like, hey, you know, in Windows, people have written their own open source drivers because the Catalyst drivers suck so bad. But I don't know.
Don't like the open source drivers actually work better than the closed drivers for like some of the older cards?
Yeah. It's because, you know, there have been more people beating on it.
Interesting. Well, one story I saw was that NVIDIA is rumored to get into the CPU business. Did you hear about this?
No.
Oh, they're gonna have to fight off ATI.
I guess so, yeah. But they, supposedly that they have to do some kind of a licensing deal with Intel and AMD because they own so many patents on CPU design.
That would suck.
Yeah, so if they don't do that, they might get sued.
Hey, what's really going to suck for them is when... what's going to suck for them is when Intel gets into the graphics card business, which is something they're doing right now. They're actually building a graphics card that has, I think it was like 19 or 20 Pentium 1 chips on it.
Are you talking about the one that's supposed to be the spiritual successor to 3DFX's Glide?
I'm going to assume yes.
Because Intel's been in the video card market for a long time.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, like, actual video cards, not, you know, just the little chip on your motherboard thing. Like, they're doing actual, you know, PCI Express graphics cards.
I think the only problem they're going to run into, I think, is what's going with the whole concept of Glide is, unfortunately, you know, Microsoft's direct shit is so popular for video game manufacturers that they're going to have to fight their way into that market, and they could just get buried under DirectX.
So all I've got to say is as long as they keep making the cards, I'll buy them as long as they have free drivers.
Now, I just ordered a new Dell laptop. In fact, I got a notification today that it finally shipped. I ordered it about 2 weeks ago. So I was originally going to get it with the NVIDIA graphics card, but then I heard about the problem they were having with the 8400 and the 8600 graphics cards, the mobility cards. So I canceled that order, and I went with the Intel 3100 graphics card. So
see, the Intel cards are really, really nice, and they have open source drivers.
Yeah, the open source driver is supposedly very good on it, so I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to get it. Hopefully it's here by Friday. That's the estimated delivery date. I can't wait to get my new laptop, man.
Say, I've got it's a Celeron M 1.5 gigahertz with the, I think it's the GMA 915 or 950, and I run Compass Fusion on it flawlessly. Like, I don't see why you would have needed the NVIDIA card at all.
Yeah, I ordered the Dell XPS 1330, which is the smaller version of like the 15-inch one.
Yeah.
And I just like the smaller form factor. It's a pretty powerful machine. It's pretty loaded, man. I'm just dying to get my hands. I think that machine is nicer than the Apple laptops easily. Handily beats the Apples in terms of coolness. That's just my opinion. You know, some of the stuff that Dell's been doing lately, man, is fantastic. Some of the new lines that they're releasing, man, it's good stuff. You got to give it to Dell.
Finally, you know, start to look like decent machines and not just, hey, it's another laptop.
Exactly. They're actually styling, you know?
Well, yeah, but now, you know, I'm not going to want to put all the stickers and crap on it.
They'll get on there eventually. I don't know. The number one thing I hate about Apple laptops, man, is those stupid chiclet keyboards. I can't stand them.
Yeah.
I cannot stand them. My laptop has to have a good keyboard that's got a nice tactile feel to it. Not calculator buttons, okay?
Yeah, I've run into that recently. I've got my main laptop is a Gateway Solo 1450, but I've been playing around with an older compact Presario, like 1240 or something, an old 75 megahertz laptop. And I'm sitting there typing on that, you know, trying to set up the digital picture frame I'm working on. And then going back over to my laptop, I'm like, I hate the keyboard on my laptop. I love it on this old piece of shit.
My old piece of shit laptop finally died on me, man. I had a Walmart New Balance, man. I think I paid like $499 for it 3 years ago. And it just, It's a piece of crap. Made by Chinese slave labor.
Slave labor.
Yeah, it's made by Chinese slave labor.
I remember talking about that on the show when you got it.
Yeah, yeah. I intended it to last a year, and I'm still using it almost 3 years later. So, but its time has come. Now, Link always reminds me that he bought an Acer around the same time, and it's still running well. Right, Link?
Yes, it is. Acer Aspire 3680. Cheapo junk top. Still in perfect condition and still running like top.
What kind of graphics? What kind of graphics card?
It's because the Taiwanese beat their children a little less than the Chinese do.
It surprises me on hardware. I've got a NEC Versa LX that only recently has started to show any kinds of problems, and if I wanted to take the effort to find a new screen for it, it'd be back in perfect condition. And, you know, that's an old Pentium 2 233. The compact Rosario is a Pentium 1 75 megahertz. And these things are still clicking along awesome, yet, you know, a machine that's 2 or 3 years old at this point is just choking.
One product that's out now is the Acer Aspire 1 Mini. Those are finally out, and people are running out and getting that thing. Has an Intel Atom processor. Chess Griffin, he posted a little review in our forum. I'll post the link in the IRC. People can check it out. And I think Ken Fallon also bought one, too.
What's the price point on those?
I think, let me see. Chess said he paid... They go for $375 to $399. He got a return, a box return for $330.
So, see, I hadn't heard anything about the One Mini yet.
Yeah, if you check out that forum posting, you can see what Chess says about it, and Ken Fallon also follows up. Chess put a picture of himself drinking Pilsner Urquell, bastard, while on vacation using his Acer.
That's nice.
The Pilsner Urquell?
Laptop. I've never had the Pilsner Urquell.
Oh, it's great. It's a great Pilsner. Pilsner is great. Not a lot of people like Pilsner. I love it.
It's a beer. I've got better things to do with my alcoholic time than drink beer.
That's good beer, though.
Say, there's a difference between good beer and beer.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly.
There's a difference between any beer and whiskey.
Oh, you're a whiskey drinker, Dragon Blue?
Yep.
I should talk to Link. He's a whiskey guy.
Good man. It's nice to hear that someone else in the world has got some nads.
You know, I've tried probably 24 different beers, and all of them have the beer taste.
Well, it's beer.
So that's why I drink stout.
Stout's really good. I enjoy stout. You ever have barley wine?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that stuff kicks your ass, man. It's like 12-13%.
And I would
find me some of that.
Yeah, you know what I'll do? Listen, I'm going to bring a six-pack of Weyerbacher beer with us. Oh, six? What? I'll get a case. I'm going to get a case of Blithering Idiot barley wine.
That's what I was going to tell you. Bring Blithering Idiot.
That's what I'm bringing.
I'll even have some of that. That's pretty good.
I'm bringing a case of Blithering Idiot, man, from Weyerbacher Brewery, which is right down the road from me here.
We really need to get them as a sponsor.
Seriously, I know.
Should stop over and tell them.
They have. Weyerbacher is this microbrewery that's over here in Easton, literally 5 minutes away from my house here. And
tell them I'll stick a link up on the website for them or something. You know, they can throw us a case or two to take to all.
Oh, it's quality stuff, man. It's quality stuff.
And say you bring the beer, and Peter64 is sending me a couple of jars of Vegemite.
You know, I had Vegemite a long, long time ago, and it was the most disgusting stuff I ever tasted. And Peter's claiming that there's other Vegemite brands that are a lot better. I'll try it again.
I will never understand why that crap is so popular in Australia.
Because they all grew up on it.
They're too busy humping the livestock to want to eat it. Or is that Scotland?
He'll tell you that that's the Kiwis right there. They're the ones that are into sheep shagging. So yeah, he's sending three jars up for me to take to OLF. One's for Klaatu, one's for Monster B, and one is for me to make everyone else eat.
Well, let me get through, you know, some whiskey first.
That's what I'm thinking.
I enjoy some whiskey. What Maker's Mark I like. Nice bourbon.
Yeah, say I drink Jameson. Triple distilled Irish whiskey.
Jameson's?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I'll bring some. Are you going to OLF?
Yeah.
I'll bring some whiskey with me that's actually whiskey.
made in a tub?
No, like real Irish whiskey, not the Jameson stuff that they say is Irish whiskey that really isn't.
And I just can't drink Guinness Stout after being in Ireland, because the crap we've got over here just doesn't compare to when you can get it in a pub in Ireland and it's like 3 hours old from the brewery.
Don't a lot of the pubs that are in the area near the brewery have the stuff actually piped in? That's what I heard.
Only the ones that are within, like, a couple blocks from what I heard while I was over there. If you're more than just a couple blocks away, they just bring it over in a, you know.
Kegs.
Keg.
I'm sure it's a lot better.
Yeah, so the stuff that they sell here is actually made in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just pump it right straight from the urinal.
Recycled Canadian beer.
Well, one of the old breweries over here that was recently, they got bought by, I think it was like Zima or something. One of those wolf whatever drinks. They got bought by Sam Adams. They're going to be making Sam Adams beer pretty soon. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, Sam Adams isn't bad.
It's decent. It's better than
It'll
Zima.
It'll get you drunk.
It's better than Zima.
Yeah.
Well, while you're having your beer, I'll enjoy my whiskey and vodka martinis.
Whiskey and Coke, that's what you got to have.
Yeah.
It's a man's drink.
I used to love Jack and Coke back in the day.
Real men don't need chasers for whiskey.
That's how you chase whiskey with another whiskey.
Exactly.
Who said chaser, man? Put it right in there. That's how you hide it. You know?
That's how you get it into the conference.
Exactly.
I mean, I would never drink at a conference. You guys crazy? What?
Hey, you get some good whiskey and it's going to look like Coke anyway.
So thanks everyone for tuning in to Booze Hound Weekly.
It's okay. Sometimes we
subsidiary
diverge.
Of Seven Pretentious Rose Industries.
We diverge. It happens. It's okay, really.
Yeah, and if we talk about Gen 2, iPod, and Asterix, we've got an episode of Ben Rev.
Do you guys run Gen 2?
No,
I used to.
I have things to do with my computer.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
That's always been my issue with Gen 2 is I want to spend my time having my computer being useful, not making my computer useful.
Yeah. All your computer does is compile. To me, that's not very productive.
Well, it depends on the context, right? Like, if your main function as a package contributor is to compile packages into binaries for other people to install, that's a functional and
exactly
you're
a package
use
maintainer.
Of your time,
right?
However, if your entire existence is to compile X in order to get X running on your Linux box, I think that's probably a waste of most people's time.
Yeah, I've got shooting people in the face to do.
Yeah.
I mean, Urban Terror isn't going to play itself.
Is that your game?
Now we're going to get all the
Urban
Terror.
Oh yeah, it's my game
from the Gen 2 Racer.
You know, I haven't actually played that. I should check
but
it
no,
out.
But no. I really like to compile stuff all the time because it makes my computer 0.000001 nanoseconds faster than anybody else's.
Okay, all the Gen 2 crybabies can send their crap to me, 330 at linuxcranks.info. We'll read it on the show, and we'll make fun of you.
The one, like, hardcore Gen 2 user that we know was Ben Stockwell, and I don't think he's running it anymore. He runs, he's into Slackware, right? I think that's what he does.
Did he find a woman? Is that what it is? He has all his time taken up by, you know, having sex?
See, that's when I was married, I ran Gen 2 because I could start an install and go, I got 2 hours to kill. Let's go fuck the wife.
Now I know you're lying because when you're married, that doesn't happen.
When you're only married a year and it does.
I'm not gonna answer that because my wife is sitting on my lap right now.
Hello?
Hello, Pat's wife.
She can't hear you. She doesn't have the headphones on.
So we can say all kinds of wonderful things about her.
Oh, no. She might hear the recording.
Hey, that's wonderful.
Wait, Dragon Blue, are you going to OLF? Because, yeah, somebody else might be missing teeth if you start making fun of Mrs. Pat.
See, everyone thinks I was going to say something horrible about Pat's wife. I'm saying, you know, she needs to, you know, come to OLF and make us some hamburgers or something.
Nah.
I heard she's a good cook by looking at the pictures of Pat.
Hey, what I'm going to do, I'm going to ask her, Tina, what do you want me to do if I ever run into that guy that was harassing us on the phone? What would you want me to do to him?
Things that may be unimaginable.
So she's in agreement.
He was a big asshole.
There you go.
Well, so now we've heard Dan's wife and Pat's wife. Have we heard Alan and Link's wife yet?
We've heard Link's wife, Michelle. She's been on.
My wife's been on the show.
Yeah.
Quite a
few Alan's wife now.
She's like Alan. She doesn't ever talk.
Well,
she's probably on right now. We'd never know.
That's because Alan keeps her in the pit.
Yeah, all you guys, if you want to come up and bust my chops, you could pretend to be the harasser. But there are certain details that I'm not divulging to anybody that only this person would know. So if you don't know these details, then I know you're full of shit.
We just thought it'd be hilarious to walk around in OLF with a t-shirt that says, Pat, it was me.
That would be funny. I would take a picture of that. That and Alicia's boyfriend.
Are those up on Linux Crank's shop yet?
Yeah, they are, actually. Actually, Klaatu came up with a better idea for him than I did.
What was the idea?
It's a, I pranked Pat from TLLTS, and it has a big phone next to it.
I want to hear those recordings. If you have those recordings, play them back.
The recordings?
Yeah.
See, I don't have those. That's Monster B.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the board op. I'm just the talking head.
Peter 64 did it.
Peter 64 is just sitting down there mating with kangaroos and such. It's really hard to make fun of that guy when he's not, you know, on the line with you.
He's a funny guy, Peter 64.
I like
that. Hey,
you guys are really funny over there, man. If anybody who hasn't heard Linux Cranks, definitely give it a listen. It's good, just good fun, man. They goof on everybody. It's not that serious.
Oh, it's not serious at all.
It's funny. Dave Yates is on there, Chad Wallenberg, Klaatu, Zoke, Mrs. Zoke. Who else? Who am I missing?
Hey, we about killed Mrs. Zoke last show. During the pre-show, she was like turning blue and purple, and it was a good time.
I actually wanted to bring up my experience from Gen Con recently.
What's Gen Con?
Gen Con is a massive gaming convention. Computer games, board games, D&D, Vampire the Masquerade, all the good stuff in life. Well, there were a lot of people with computer games there this year, and I was going around asking them all, will your software run under Wine at least, or is there a native Linux port? And this one guy talked to him. He's like, you know, I don't know. Let me ask the lead developer. Turns the lead developer, asks the question. Guy's like, I don't know. You like games? Yeah. Get Windows XP. Turn back to the original guy. Sir, it's been wonderful talking to you, but I refuse to buy a product that has a lead developer like him on it.
Oh, I love these shirts, man. Glad they did a great job.
But a company I do want to mention as far as their game goes is Chron-X, because I was talking to them and found out that their display, they were actually using three Ubuntu-powered laptops to run their display, and they use Eclipse to write their game.
Eclipse is a great piece of software, man. Any of you guys have used it?
I opened
No.
That was about it.
I've used it quite a bit. It's really good. It's a whole plugin architecture. You can make customized plugins for, you know, a particular language or a piece of software. A lot of, like, the embedded people, they develop their own SDKs using Eclipse plugins.
Say I couldn't code my way out of a wet paper bag, so I couldn't do any of that.
And I'm, you know, fighting through my digital picture frame with enough problems that coding's the least of my concerns right now.
How did you do your digital picture frame? I know Linkwood did one not too long ago.
I did a base Debian install, installed Samba, FBI, a couple other packages, NoX, and so I'm just doing it that way. I'm going to be trying to do a write-up on it here in the next couple days, but I've run into an interesting problem with what I'm doing where an apostrophe just screws up the main script I'm using to power it all.
I have a damn small Linux book, and they go through a build your own Linux frame, digital frame in it.
If you're going the damn small route, I've run across a project called MCDPF. That is a, when you pull it down, it's just a backup.tar.gz file. You install your DSL, boot it with a thumb drive in with the backup file on it, install that, and it turns it into a pretty nice picture frame from everything I can tell.
Link, when you did your picture frame, how'd you do it? What'd you base it on?
I did the easiest install in the world. I took Ubuntu, and even though it's slow, right, it really doesn't matter because I'm not doing anything on the picture frame. So I just installed Ubuntu on the laptop. There's a setting under, like, GDM or whatever the hell it is for Ubuntu to auto-log a user in. And I have it auto-log the user in, and then once it auto-logs the user in, I have the an auto-start script that starts up that runs, what the hell is it called?
Say.
It runs, I'm looking at it right now. It sets X-host on there so that I can actually, you know, log in. Does set term blank zero and turns off the power saving stuff so that the display doesn't turn off. Turns off DPMS and then runs FEH, which, you know, takes over your entire display and goes through a directory where you can have, you know, your picture files. And since it's a laptop and it's it keeps the internet connection running on it, I can simply SSH into it or copy pictures to it from, you know, anywhere in my house, and it just runs. I mean, I also have a little script on there that runs in cron so that it shuts the display off at like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night and turns it back on at 5 o'clock in the morning or something like that, because I really don't need to have it running and ruining the LCD or whatever in the middle of the night, or just, you know, annoying the hell out of me with the brightness of the pictures flipping around, you know, in the middle of the night in my living room. So I just have it shut off. But it's been hanging on my wall and working for, I don't even know how long ago I did it. Just sits there and goes.
So you installed
it? Walks in
you installed it to a hard drive, Link?
Cool. Yeah.
A lot of people seem to call the flash for
it. I took an old laptop. Yeah, I just took an old laptop and I pulled the plastics off the LCD, the back of the LCD, and I flipped the LCD around and I used double sided tape, like double sided mounting tape. And mounted the stuck the LCD to the back of the or to the bottom of the laptop, and then I used, you know, some more double sided foam tape and mounted a picture frame to the LCD, you know, and I just hung it on the damn wall, installed Ubuntu on it, and set it up to run FVH on a picture directory, and off it goes.
Now, what happens if you put a new picture in? Does it find it without a problem and keep going, or?
No, I have to restart it if I put another picture in.
Okay. See, on the one I'm doing, I've got, I installed RunGetty.
Uh-huh.
So one of the first things it'll do is it'll just automatically log in the user I've created. And for that user, I've got added to the .bashrc file the line to just start FBI with the dash no verbose and the loop command and how long I want to do it, and point it to a text file.
Right.
And that text file is updated by a directory check script I've written, that it goes through and goes, oh, nothing new, or it's got new files. If it finds new files, it kills FBI, moves the new list over to, or removes the old list, copies the new list over to the old, to the list name, and then fires it back up.
Mm-hmm.
Just the one problem I hit is for using the script I am to find all the images, if I've got an apostrophe in the image name, it just kills it all right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to show someone that and see if they can help me figure out a way around it, or if I'm just going to have to make sure I don't.
Quotes around the name.
I'll show you the line that's doing the heavy lifting on that later, Link, and see if you can help me figure out the problem.
Yeah, it's not a problem. That's not a problem. But yeah, mine, I just use FAT, and like if I upload new pictures, I just kill all, hup it, you know, and pow, it starts right back up again, and everything's cool, and it starts reading the new pictures, and it just goes. And like I said, you know, what's cool about it is, you know, what's cool about the whole project is you always see, like, in my RSS feeds, I see stuff from like buy.com, you know, where they're selling these digital picture frames. I wanted one for so long. They're selling these digital picture frames at like 4 inches, right?
Expensive.
For like $80. Right? It's an immensely expensive gadget to have. And
yeah, I think.
Go ahead.
I think for the size screen I've got right now, the last time I looked at prices, it would be almost $200.
Yeah. Like, I got a 14-inch screen, right, on mine. It's a 14-point-something-inch screen laptop.
I've got a 10, I think.
Yeah. So, that's a really expensive thing. And it cost me nothing to make that. I was going to throw the damn laptop out, you know. Because, it's 100 megahertz or something like that. Anyway, you know, I put this stuff on there, have this giant picture frame on there, and everybody walks in the house, looks at it first thing, and remarks about how wickedly cool that is, you know, because it looks really good, and it's got a decent screen on it, which, you know, makes, you know, makes the whole project. You got to have a laptop with a good screen in order to do that.
That's the whole point of it. It's the big screen.
But, you know, it looks great, and it cost me pretty much, you know, I'm going to say I had the laptop, because most computer geeks are going to have some kind of junky thing laying around, or they can get something really cheap. But really what it cost me was like 20 bucks for the picture frame and the double-sided stick tape and the matting material and crap like that, you know, and maybe a half hour of my time and an old coat hanger. That's about it, you know.
Are you running that over wireless or wired?
No, it's wireless.
See, I'm doing wireless too, but I've got a WPA2 encrypted network, and that was fun stuff figuring out for the first day or two, figuring out exactly how to set that up to where when it powered on.
If you had run it on Ubuntu, you could have done it right off the bat. That's why I did that. You know, I put Ubuntu on there, had it do the auto login. Ubuntu will automatically log into your network, you know, that you had it configured for.
I was just trying to keep the overhead as low as possible.
Yeah. Well,
and
I thought about that too, and I was going to do like a really, really minimal like NetBSD install or something like that. But I figured really it doesn't matter what the overhead is on the installation, because I'm not ever going to use the laptop for anything. You know what I mean? It can swap all it wants to, getting itself going. Once it gets going, the only thing it's doing is running FEH and swapping pictures out. It doesn't do anything else other than that.
Yeah. And I think the one other thing I'm doing that seems a little different than most other projects I've run across like this is I don't keep any of my pictures on the laptop itself. I've got them on a Samba share on my FreeNAS box. And in that share are two folders, upload and display. Drop a copy of the, you know, whatever image into the upload, and it goes through with Mogify and just resizes them all to 800 by 600 because FBI's auto resize function sucks.
Uh-huh.
Compared to ZGVs, and I think the pictures actually end up looking a little better using Mogify to resize them all than letting, you know, ZGV or FBI do the resizing. I don't know how Face stacks up for its resize capability.
It works pretty good. I don't have, you know what I mean? I don't have any real complaints about it, so.
See, I was thinking about doing one and doing it even more ghetto than U-Link. I was just going to do a regular Ubuntu install, stick all the pictures in, you know, in just a pictures folder, and set the screensaver to start after a second and just loop through the pictures.
See, now, I thought about doing that. I thought about doing that, too, but it just doesn't seem as robust a thing as FAT does. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, you have to wait for the screensaver to start and all that other crap, and it just seems like a pain in the butt. And if you bump the laptop and manage to, you know, jar one of the keys or something like that, the screensaver will stop and be prompting you for password or something like that. And I just figured it was easier just to hijack control of the X session right away and do it that way, you know?
And I'd still recommend anyone, you know, wanting to build their own but not do a lot of effort to check out the damn small Linux and McDPS combination. McDPS seems to have some interesting features, like weather and other things.
Yeah, some people rip out the hard drives entirely and just go with flash storage. So, you know, in that case, you would want something that's a smaller footprint.
And I'm going to have to do a Hacker Public Radio on the one I did, because there's a Windows how-to on making a digital picture frame, and I think that needs corrected.
It's a good project. A lot of people have, you know, old crappy laptops sitting around doing nothing.
And there's just, like, so many people do it in different interesting ways is half the fun of the project, I think.
So what other OLF things you guys are looking forward to? Is this the first time you guys are going?
Yeah.
No, this will be my third.
Hey, you never come over to us and said hello?
Yeah, I did. You guys have a picture of me. I've got a Tilt sticker on my laptop.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry.
That's cool. See, I was a nobody then, and now I'm still a nobody.
You're a cranky nobody.
Yeah, that's the only difference.
So who started Linux?
I was cranky then. I just...
Whose idea was it to start the Linux Cranks? Was it Monster B?
Yeah, it's Monster B. He's the ringmaster of the circus. I just got roped into emceeing the whole thing because I have radio experience.
What kind of radio experience? Talk show or?
I did a early morning classic rock show on WECI 91.5 FM, Richmond's public radio. Yeah, I'll never be able to get that bumper out of my head.
Did you have your puker voice?
Oh, yeah, I have the radio voice right here. Yeah, it was bad. It was a bad time.
Isn't that what they call, like, the guys who have, like, that phony radio voice? Hi, WKRZ,
yeah.
Cincinnati. Top of the morning here, 7:30, we got the traffic report.
Yeah, I didn't do that, because the only people that were listening were people in, they were in, like, factories and shit. I was like, they don't want to hear that. It's like, these guys want to hear tunes and all that. I was sure I was all about less cock and more rock.
I gave up on radio. There used to be a station out of Indianapolis, like 107.9, and they just started to trounce Clear Channel. And they had, you know, some awesome segments like 2 Hours to Kill, A Boot to the Head. And then Clear Channel bought them and turned them into a Mexican radio station.
Really? Clear Channel is bought like every other radio station in this country.
Yeah, that's why I was on public radio.
And the biggest pisser of it all is I'm listening to them. Midnight, they switch over and, okay, they're doing Mexican metal now. Okay, sure, switch over to the Clear Channel station. And they're like, and we're wishing a fond salute to this station. And then they kick on Walls of Voodoo's Mexican radio.
Did you guys do Last FM?
Oh, yeah.
And what
Not anymore.
What do you think of Last FM?
I really like it. I use it on my 800 all the time.
Vegalume?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. I like it. I got turned on to a lot of new music through Last FM. It's funny though when you use if you go into Last FM either using their desktop client or the web interface, you can like search for different artists and artists they'll come back with a list of like artists.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you got to remember is if you do that and then you go in through Vegalume, which is like the little Nokia client, it'll just play whatever is on that list. For some strange reason, I was getting, like, Mexican punk music.
Oh, it's awesome.
There was like
dude,
13, 14 tracks. And they all sucked. I'm like, I don't want to listen to this. So I kept, you know, hate it.
You're like, why the hell does it keep coming up?
I don't know. And what it is, also, sometimes people recommend stuff to you.
And no one ever recommends me anything, but I think it's just everybody hates me, but that's fine.
Well, a recommendation for a band I have for everyone, and this is because of Gen Con again, is a group called Cruciform Injection. And something interesting I found out about them at Gen Con this year, the lead singer for the band is one of the developers of the game The Conduit for the Wii.
What is it?
I thought that was just...
Cruciform Injection?
Cruciform Injection. But the lead singer for the band is a, you know, video game developer. I thought that was pretty damn cool.
I see the MySpace page, but I'm not going to go to MySpace because I hate MySpace.
MySpace is the giant turd with glitter in it of the internet.
Have you seen our MySpace website? Are you aware of the TLTS MySpace page?
I'm aware it exists, but...
You should check it out. I like it.
Hey, Pat, if you do a search for, I think, Apophis Consortium, you'll find their regular web page.
Okay. Yep.
It'll also cover the RPG they make.
I'm always on the lookout.
What the hell is Agrotech?
Is that what they claim they are?
Yeah, that's what Wikipedia says they are.
I wouldn't know about that. I like them, so I listen.
It's an evolution of electro-industrial and dark electro music with a strong influence in techno.
What the hell?
Yeah, it sounds like a bunch of guys get together and make some noise, and we've got to call it something.
Yeah, but the chick who runs their synth unit is hot as hell. I also experienced a band called HexRX recently.
So is this like mostly like industrial type music or?
I would say HexRX is kind of, to me, was reminiscent of Slipknot.
So what's the deal with Last.fm? Did they have to pay licensing to the RIAA? They were, for the longest time, they got that, right? And then they got hauled to court?
They've been paying, all radio stations pay one royalty for, I think they pay it to the composers.
ASCAP?
Yeah, it was for it being a public performance. Yeah, the broadcast was. But now the RIAA is going through and saying, no, you also have to pay royalty to the band that played it. And that's what they've been fighting for so long. Because the royalties for the composers is really, really cheap. So that's one of the reasons why I went to all Creative Commons and or indie music. I just don't want to deal with any of it anymore.
Do you guys buy any online music?
I haven't paid for it, but the only stuff I've downloaded recently was Jonathan Colton.
Oh, someone's listening to something. Sounds like Rammstein.
Yes. I was wondering if anybody was going to catch that.
Du Haus. Magnitude's a great website. I like the stuff that's on there. You can listen to the whole catalog. If you have a podcast, you can use any of the music on there for free.
Magnitude is awesome, and we need to get Joe back on the show.
Yeah, Magnitude's a
great
site.
The other awesome service right now is Amazon.
Yeah, the Amazon site's great. No DRM. Now, I heard they do put some kind of a watermark in there.
Yeah, ID3 tags. God, it'd be great if I learned how to speak English.
Which is fine, I could live with that.
Don't you live in America?
Well, yeah, but that's why I speak American.
You don't need, that's what I was going to say, you don't need to speak English to live in America. In fact, that's just a side language, you know?
Yeah, we speak, bullets and blood here.
Yeah, so one of the things I'm doing here is I'm doing the stream tonight, and I'm using this client called Butt, B-U-T-T.
Dan has already made fun of him for it.
Yes.
Just go on.
It's called Broadcasting Using This Tool. It's on SourceForge. And if you're looking for a nice Icecast client, I definitely highly recommend it. It works really well. I think this is the easiest Icecast client to use. It has some nice features and nice displays. It has like a little digital VU meter. It tells you when you're connected. It automatically records your stream to an MP3 file. You can connect to multiple servers. It also displays, you could see how long you've been broadcasting. how much data you've been pushing through the stream. So this is going to come in useful when we go to Ohio Linux Fest, and we're going to do a live stream. I can have a ballpark idea how much data we're going to be pushing per hour, and you know we'll know when we're going to hit our bandwidth limit, and if we go over, how much it's going to cost us. So
and there you have it, folks. Once again, we have Pat playing with his butt on the show.
I'm not playing with my butt. I'm playing with the butt.
He's playing with someone else's butt.
But I'm really looking forward to that. We haven't done that. We've been to OLF.
Looking forward to playing with his butt the past two years.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun, man, doing a live stream. What do you think?
I'm anxious to do that. And I want you to – who's your cell phone carrier, Pat?
Right now I'm with AT&T.
Do me a favor and shoot me like what their prices are for, you know, doing. I'm assuming you're just like going to get a month for the data package.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways to do it. Right now, I'm doing pay as you go for my cell phone service with them, and that's dirt cheap. That's like the bare bones minimum, which I kind of.
I'll do some research over here and see how much it costs for. I have Verizon, so I'll see how much it costs for a month data package, Verizon, and see what kind of deal they have. And, you know, maybe we can go with whatever one has the best deal.
The only problem...
I don't know who Alan and Dan has, so...
In my research, I looked at the different carriers, and the only one that lets you actually use your own hardware, if you have your own data card, is AT&T. All the other ones provide a data card for you. They want you to buy it from them, and it's a locked device. It only works with them.
Well, see, now... I know with Verizon, I can do it over Bluetooth.
Right. You can tether it to your phone. That's a little different.
Right.
With the phone?
I don't know.
For the most part, with the phone, you're not going to get the speed that you would with an actual data card. Like,
yeah.
I ordered this Huawei card. This thing supposedly does 3.6 megabits up and down. And all you need to do is pop a SIM chip in there. You know, the SIM chip is GSM-type carriers.
Right.
Which is AT&T. They have a you know, SIM chip. You know, you should be able to just take the SIM chip out of your phone and pop it into the data card, and it should work if you have a data plan. So we'll see. Who just joined us? Is that Dan?
It's Mike.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
What's going on?
Just hanging in there.
You were doing a class recently, weren't you? Like a Linux admin class?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
It went okay. I get a test Friday. I'm going to do the CompTIA Linux Plus test on Friday at 10:30, so hopefully I pass.
You better pass or you're in trouble.
Yeah, it was $232 for the test, so we'll see.
I don't know. What are the LPI certifications going for these days?
I think the test, I got to find out. I'm going to do that one next. I think that's probably right around the same price. There's three steps. I think it's LPI 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to do the 1 and then see where I can get after that.
So are you an expert now?
Yeah, right. No.
He's not an expert until he becomes an Apple genius.
Yeah, right.
All the stories we can tell about those guys.
Now, I was listening to you guys talk about those wireless broadband. I get a Verizon one that works pretty well.
Yeah, they work well, but they're locked, aren't they?
Well, I mean, for data, cares, really. I mean, I tether it to my laptop, and I got unlimited bandwidth, and I get it through work, and it's like $41 for the plan, and then it's another $15 for unlimited data. It works well. I can do video over it, so.
What kind of speeds do you get up and down?
I can do 768 up and like a meg and a half down.
That's plenty to do a stream. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, supposedly they work okay. The Verizon ones work okay in Linux. Well, one thing that's taken into consideration, if you're a GNOME user, Network Manager, the new version that's I think in beta now, 0.7. supposedly it supports 3G data cards out of the box. Before, you would have to do this a hack version of, like, WV dial to get it to work properly. Supposedly the new version will you won't have to do anything. You just fire up network managers and click on the 3G data card tab, and you should be in business. Fill a couple fields out, and then it should work. So I'm going to find out. That's probably the route I'm going to try with this modem when it comes. I'll upgrade to the newer network manager and see if it works through that.
Now, was that, you bought a USB card or a PCMCI
card?
Yeah,
it's a USB. It's a Chinese brand, Huawei, and supposedly works very well in Linux. It gets very good transfer speeds. The only thing, obviously, it's limited by the speed of the carrier that you
right.
go with. But people say good things about it, so we'll see.
How much did that card set you back?
$115. That's with shipping.
Brand new or secondary market?
It's new. So I'll see how it works, and I'll let everybody know. Yeah, I know with Verizon and also Sprint, they have these deals where you sign up that supposedly there's a 30-day release clause so that if you don't like it, you can get out of the contract. I don't know how difficult it is. And I don't know if there's any penalty fees that they hit you up with. They probably do.
It probably depends on how hard it is to get out of that as to how many ex-AOL people they hired.
Yeah, I mean, all these data plans, they all want you to go into, like, a two-year contract. That's their deal. And I think the only one who doesn't like, allow, none of them allow, like, a month-by-month thing except AT&T, as far as I know. Now, there are some other carriers. There's a small carrier that's based in the Midwest. I forget the name of it. They're, like, in Ohio and a few other states.
Revel?
Maybe. I was looking at their website, and their rates were pretty cheap. But their coverage isn't, like, not the entire U.S. But I don't care. This is just something to bring to, like, Ohio and do the show and then disconnect it, you know?
How much bandwidth do you need to do the stream? Like, 50K up?
Not a lot. Not a lot. I think you need faster than 50. I do 768 kilobits up here through the cable modem.
Yep.
And it seems okay. The quality seems okay, right?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, so I think I don't know. If I had to guess, I would think probably in the 100 kilobits area would be the bare bones minimum. That would be my guess, somewhere in that range. I don't know for sure.
Don't most cars.
Well, as long as you're going up to a server that's going to do all the streaming for you.
Yeah, that's the idea. Is you just get the client going to the main Icecast server, and then everybody feeds off the Icecast server, all the mirrors, and everybody hits the mirrors. That's pretty much what we do now. I mean,
because when I was in the hotel room, I was using my Verizon card to you guys. Connected directly.
Oh, you were doing the VoIP that way?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sounded fine.
The VoIP in the hotel was terrible. So I just connected through my phone, and it was up for, what, an hour and a half or something? I think a total, like, I looked at the statistics. It was like 7 or 8 meg total bandwidth of transmit and receive, so it wasn't very much.
Now, a lot of the times they say unlimited, but isn't there like a five gig data cap?
It's a 5 gig cap.
So if you go over, they hit you up, right? Additionally,
A lot of times they'll just cancel your service.
It's interesting because if you're doing either VoIP or, in my case, doing video, when I look at the stats of a call when I've been on for an hour or whatever. It shows very little data transferred. So is it just measuring TCP data or UDP data?
Okay, the stream I've been pushing up tonight has been up for almost 2 hours, and I'm looking at the data that was sent. It's around 111,400 kilobits. That's not a lot at all, right?
No, that's like 11 meg.
Yeah, for 2 hours, 11 meg. That's not a lot at all.
No, it's not.
Say, you may be able to stay under the 5 gig cap.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out how many hours we can actually stream till we hit the cap. So after 2 hours, we do 11 meg.
You could stream the entire weekend.
Yeah, pretty much, man. This is not too bad at all.
So you could do a live trio from the booth.
We'll have to follow Dan into the toilet. We'll hear him singing to himself in the bathroom.
I don't want anything to do with that kind of stream, Pat.
Don't cross the streams.
What I was getting ready to say.
The one place in the entire world that you do not want to follow Dan is into the bathroom, man. It's bad enough if you get locked in a car with him or something like that, you know?
Do not let Dan hear White Castles.
White Castles and Jack Daniels, man. A match made in hell.
You should never drink with White Castle.
Start feeding him pickled hot sausages and just watch what happens.
Oh, jeez.
You know, I don't have to see. I've heard your guys' reaction when sitting in a room with him.
You're missing out, Dan's
though,
ass.
You cannot. It's an indescribable thing that you can only, you know, you have to experience in real time for yourself. Otherwise, you just don't know.
So, in other words, you're saying if you had a room with Dan and a place in hell, you'd rent the room out with Dan and stay in hell?
I can't be that bad.
You could definitely have a source of interesting smells there.
Well,
okay.
This
is 111,000 kilobytes, is that 11 meg or 111 meg?
I don't know. I'm stuck at math, so.
It's 111 meg.
Yeah, it's 111 meg. So 2 hours is 111 meg.
Yeah, you're probably fit the whole weekend in under 5 gigs.
Of course, that's provided that you don't check your mail or anything like that. You know?
True, true. Well, for that, I'd use a hotel.
Try to set a new broadcast record and beat 74 hours.
I mean, stay up for the whole time?
Yeah.
That's not a good idea, especially if you're driving.
Another show I listened to, they recently did a marathon of 74 hours, and they had a rotating cast of guests to pull it off.
Yeah, JZA's did the math. He's saying 111 meg at 2 hours, you can do 48 hours. I think we can go crazy.
Yeah.
I suck at math.
Go crazy. I thought we were crazy.
So it sounds like we can pretty much do, you know, some a long-ass show pretty much.
Yep, I think we can do it. But like I said, let me check for my data plan stuff over here. Maybe we can, maybe we can really get something going on. That'd be neat.
Whatever works out the best.
It'd be nice to be able to broadcast this time live, and do some stuff
and
give people something to listen to. It'd be really, really nice if we could broadcast some video too. But
video is pushing it, man.
It's a whole different thing.
Unless you do stick cam.
Well, stick cam is still video, right?
I mean, yeah, we could bring a webcam.
You know, that's plausible.
You could use stick cam from the floor maybe occasionally when you have some guest show on.
The only thing that sucks about stick cam is you can't record it as far as I know.
Yeah, you can.
How?
There's a button on the stick cam interface.
Is it really?
Yeah. I don't have it up right now. I killed it for the show. But, yeah, there's a record button.
And what does it save it as? Flash?
Oh, hell, I don't know. I've never used it. So I've never done anything worthy on stick cam of being recorded. So never played with it.
Well, stick cam's a cheap and easy way to do this video.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you guys use Talk Show, right? Talk Show?
For the yeah. and talk shit.
Yeah, it seems to go up and down the quality.
Yeah, we started pulling down the audio, like right after we do it, and running it through Levelator and cutting out some of the bare spots in it and putting it back up, trying to get the quality better.
And cutting out Peter 64 singing.
Oh, jeez. No, we cut it all out and put it at the beginning.
Is that who's that singing?
Yeah, he was the one singing the John Denver songs.
No, but the acapella.
And I was...
Who does the acapella? Is that Chad?
Oh, yeah, that's Chad. That's
sounds like
singing.
Dan.
Everybody says that.
It does. It sounds like Dan. The scary part is Dan actually thinks he's a good singer.
So does Peter.
He can get him on American Idol.
Legend in his own mind.
That would be funny if Dan auditioned for American Idol.
I want to see Dan and Stink Dog on American Idol with Lucky 225.
It's funny stuff, man.
I think Techie wants a shout out. Hey, Techie.
So is that how you get a shout-out, is claim that you're whacking it?
Pretty much, yeah.
pretty much you just make some kind of, crazy comment on the IRC, and we normally do that. Speaking of shout-outs, Pat, don't we have some thank yous from some of the some of our recent contributors that we should really make?
Yeah, a couple of people have actually contributed the money that we need for OLF, basically the table, the data plan to do the audio streaming. I haven't heard back whether or not they want us to mention their names on the air, so I think we should wait. What we'll do is maybe, in the weeks leading up to OLF, we'll announce everybody who has helped us out, and we really do appreciate it. If you guys can help us out in any, ways possible, a little cash, will help a lot if everybody kicks in a little bit. We like to, give out free stuff and, that free stuff costs us, so if you guys can help us out a little bit, we really appreciate it. I do have one actual announcement. I just want to say congratulations to Droops and his wife. They had a baby boy. So congratulations, Mr. and Mrs. Droops. Actually, it's Droops 2.1. This is their second kid.
The first one was Mrs. Droops 2.0.
Okay.
But talking about contributions... And I, keep coming back to Gen Con, but I ran into a booth there where some people were there from a project called PC Gen, which you can find over on SourceForge. And their community actually donated like $1,100 for them to have a booth at Gen Con this year. They were selling buttons and T-shirts and giving out CDs with the program on it.
That's cool. That's what we need. We need some people, like Pat said, it's a horrible thing to do, but we do it once a year where we get on the air and we beg you for money. But we need your money so that we can afford to get some cool crap or even some not cool crap, depending on how much we have.
I'd love to give out a T-shirts. Would be great if we could.
That would be great, but that cost us an ass load of money to do that. It cost us like $200-something the last time we did it. And we're all poor, so.
Say, Techie's wanting a donate link or some PayPal info.
So I think, if those of you who can donate and feel that it would make you a better person, and of course it will, please just head over to the website and hit the PayPal gift to TLLTS button. And if you don't, and you can, then we're going to find you and send you a large vial of Dan's butt butter. Donate now.
Now, are you guys going just for Saturday, Sunday, or are you guys going on Friday?
We're going to be there Friday afternoon through Sunday morning.
Is that they doing some training on Friday?
Yes, they do. That costs money, though. We're cheapos.
Oh, well.
So you guys want to do any shout-outs before we wrap things up?
Other than to tell people to listen to Linux Cranks Saturday nights at midnight Eastern, It's live.linuxcranks.info.
Shout out to any show that doesn't have Randall Schwartz.
Hear that.
I guess we don't qualify then.
You guys made a mistake, but it's over now. It's fine. It's all right.
We made up for it because you're on now.
Yeah. You had the freedom hater, and now you have the freedom lover.
I'm the freedom hater.
The original.
Let's just get this straight.
Well, we're going to wrap things up here. I'm going to play some songs. I got a couple tunes. I got this one song from a band called Big Bad Sun. It's called Come Out Baby. They're on magnatune.com. And then I'm going to follow that by a song by Jeff Wall called Colorado. So, everybody, thank you for listening to the show. We really appreciate you spending the time to come listen to us. As always, we enjoy it. Hopefully we entertained you. And hopefully you don't hate us.
Say thanks for having me on, guys.
Anytime, man. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
No problem.
Good night, everybody.
Everybody take care.
Going on. Well, come out, baby. There's a party going on. If you come on out, baby, we'll be dancing to the early dawn. Well, come in, baby. It's a nice and warm inside. Well, come in, baby. It's a nice and warm inside. If you come on in, baby, Papa's gonna take you for a ride. Hey!
We find it's always better to fire people on a Friday. Studies have statistically shown that there's less chance of an incident if you do it at the end of the week.
When I saw that fat man keel over and die, Michael, we don't have a lot of time on this earth. We weren't meant to spend it this way. Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day, filling out useless forms and listening to 8 different bosses drone on about mission statements.
What would you say you do here?
Well, look, I already told you. I deal with the goddamn customers so the engineers don't have to. I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand that? What the hell is wrong with you people?